On WPR, you get thoughtful programming that brings you news and information from close to home and from around the world. Contributing members, including the growing number of sustainers, keep WPR's future secure. Thank you.
If you have an IRA and if you are 70 and a half years old, you can make a tax-free contribution of up to $100,000 directly from your IRA to charity each year. Please consider an IRA charitable rollover gift to support Wisconsin Public Radio. It's a powerful way to give back to the radio programs that give so much to you. Learn more about the IRA charitable rollover gift program at WPRLegacy.org.
Want to know more about a WPR trip or event you heard promoted on air? Our Audience Services Department can help. Contact Audience Services by calling 1-800-747-7444.
You've tried the timeouts, tried taking away favorite toys, rewarding good behavior, but at the end of the day, all the tips and tricks for how to raise kids, they just don't seem to add up. In 2015, Catherine Reynolds Lewis wrote a piece in Mother Jones about school discipline, and it struck a nerve. A lot of people read it. It was the most read story the magazine had ever published. Her new book is The Good News About Bad Behavior, Why Kids Are Less Disciplined Than Ever, and What to Do About It. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, there are a gazillion manuals out there on how to parent right. At what point did you think, wait a minute, I have something to contribute to all the voices, all the authorities in this very crowded and opinionated and noisy field?
Well, this whole book started way back with my own question about how do I make my kids do what I want? And I was just trying to figure out how to make my own household smooth, the Girl Scout troops I led, the Odyssey of the Mind teams that I coached, just to be operational and functional without fighting. And the more that I looked at this question, the more I realized it was being asked over and over. And all of the advice maybe was telling us what to do, but it wasn't really explaining why or even how to implement some of these really great new strategies. So that's what I wanted to contribute with this book, is the whole package of the science behind why old techniques don't work and new techniques do.
And you took a real narrative approach. You put us in all of these situations in your book where we're really learning a bit more about what is happening. Why did you write in the narrative way instead of giving us some real clear bullet points as to do this when this happens?
Well, for me, I remember stories. I love data, but I remember stories. So I wanted to have both the science and the data and the bullet points, and I do have some of that. But I also wanted to tell the stories because that's what I find really resonates and sticks with parents when you're in the middle of a conflict with your child. A lot of other stuff flies out of your head, but some of those emotional and powerful stories can stick with you to help you with that really hard behavior change.
What did you find anecdotally in your research as you talked to parents, as you talked to educators and caregivers?
Well, what I was hearing more and more was kids are just different. They come into school in kindergarten unable to sit still or keep their hands to themselves. They can't resolve playground conflicts, they want to come to an adult. And any educator I talked to who had been in the teaching business for more than 10 years had this really in common. So I started talking to the scientists and looking at the research on behavioral health and mental health. And that was what was really shocking to me. I found that the National Institutes of Mental Health had done a study that found one in two children by the time they're 18 would have a mood or behavioral disorder or a substance addiction, which seems pretty severe, which is anxiety, depression, ADHD, those sorts of things. And in our homes and in our schools, that translates as difficult behavior. So a lot of the things that kids were doing that looked like acting up were often motivated by just a lack of impulse control or some fear or anxiety about a transition.
Well, take us back a little bit further in that child's upbringing and the environment they're in. How did that happen? How have these behaviors evolved?
Well, everybody likes to blame the parents, right? And I see the parents as the solution. So we can't blame parents for what's happened. It's due to huge societal factors and changes that have happened over the last 20, 30 years in how children are raised and how our families and our communities are structured. And the three big factors that I pulled out of the research and my reporting over the 5 years I spent reporting this book were, number one, the change in how kids play. Number two, the change in the growth of media, and not just social media, but in general, celebrity culture and mass media. And the third is how disconnected our communities and our families have become. Whereas a generation ago, kids might have had household chores or after-school jobs that gave them a real intrinsic sense of worth. Now they're doing things that are really wonderful, like the travel soccer team or extra homework or all these really intense pursuits that really don't feed that intrinsic self-esteem the way that just contributing to your family's well-being does. And it's good to have both, and we've lost sight of that, more of that character piece in pursuit of really wanting our kids to be successful and to be academic superstars and talented athletes, but we need to have both.
Catherine Reynolds-Lewis, let's start with that first point, play. There are tons of toys around my house. How has play changed?
Right. Well, kids are now playing less super, you know, so a generation ago, kids might have been playing in the neighborhood in mixed age groups, lightly supervised by a parent who was home, and they were running around in the backyard. So they had to work out a lot of their own conflict. And that's how all young mammals learn social skills. So puppy dogs, bear cubs, even mice and birds play at a young age. It's a really important developmental piece. And now children, and my own children, were in daycare from the time they were 5 months old. So they were with an adult whose job it was to keep them safe and free of conflict. And so that adult was much more intervening, negotiating children's conflicts, solving it for them. And so they haven't gotten that practice in resolving conflict. They also haven't had that really important experience of taking a small risk, maybe climbing a little too high on a tree and taking a tumble and learning that they were actually safe and they could handle something that was a little scary. And that's a wonderful inoculation against anxiety in the future.
I can also see where you're talking about the hovering of adults. I know when I was a kid, I was told to be back home when the streetlights came on. I mean, that was my cue. It was time to wrap up my play and be back on my front steps. That's just not the case today. There's much more supervision. Do you imagine?
Oh, absolutely. And it was a wonderful thing to be shoved out the front door and told to come back at a certain time. You had to manage your time. You had to pay attention to whatever dangers or things around you might be unsafe. And it was a great feeling of autonomy when you're a child to have that freedom. And now, really, in the 80s and 90s, all these fears around child abduction and some playground accidents and just our fear-based parenting culture has made parents feel like they can't do that. When the risks from stranger abduction, as scary as that is, are so tiny compared with 32% of children will have an anxiety diagnosis by 18. So that's the real thing we should be worried about, and we should be giving our kids experiences to be independent, to take small risks so that they can be less fearful and they can be more confident in themselves.
Author Catherine Reynolds-Lewis says that children don't need additional motivation to behave. Rather, they need skills. They're susceptible to lack of sleep, lack of outdoor play, as we've been talking about, too much screen time, poor diet. Her new book is The Good News About Bad Behavior. We're talking about it here on The Morning Show. You can join in with your insights, your aha moments on parenting, 800-642-1234. Have you worked with children for a long time and noticed generational differences in how well kids behave and listen to adults? Have you found quirky or unconventional ways to help kids behave. What about the influences of technology, of screens? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to the conversation in a moment here on the Ideas Network. Some more advice on raising kids. Talk less and listen more. Don't assume you know what's wrong. We're talking about the new book, The Good News About Bad Behavior, Why Kids Are Less Disciplined Than Ever and What to Do About It. Catherine Reynolds-Lewis stays with us here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And now let's turn our attention to the WPR Spring Membership Drive that is in full swing. Ideas Network Director Cheryl Gasser is here in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Kate. So glad to be here.
As a WPR listener, you know you're always going to hear something interesting when you tune in, and that is thanks to your support. Listeners provide the single largest share of funding for WPR programs. And when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you make this program and everything else you hear on WPR possible.
And we are looking for 10 pledges this hour. If you've already given, thank you so very much.
And if you haven't, give right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your gift funds the programs that you enjoy.
Programs like The Morning Show and conversations like the one this hour on what kids today need to thrive in parenting in the modern age. Kate does an incredible job with her team bringing these great conversations to you. Nowhere except here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio are you going to hear conversations like this and have a chance to take part. You know, we book the guests, Kate does her prep, you show up, and we have a lively, informative conversation every single morning.
So make your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Your support is key to making these discussions available to you and to everyone.
You listen to WPR year-round, I'm guessing, and now we're asking you to donate the same way you listen, by becoming a sustaining member. So make the decision once, and then you'll make ongoing contributions. Maybe it's $10 a month, maybe $20, as long as you wish.
Your sustaining membership will always be current, and it cuts down on the paperwork. Don't delay. Become a sustainer right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We tune in to Wisconsin Public Radio for shows we all know and love. But WPR is more than radio.
I am Andrea Anderson. I'm an online news producer. We work closely with reporters across the state to create something that they're proud of that's online, that people can go to WPR.org and read, and it's really an expansion of what people hear on the radio. We have a lot of different diverse content that comes onto WPR.org on a daily basis.
Wisconsin Public Radio, it's more than radio. And when you give, you're a big part of what makes it all happen.
And it starts with you. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation in support of the programs that you count on. Good morning. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Cheryl Gasser. We are raising the money that keeps Wisconsin Public Radio and all the programs that you enjoy on the air. And whether your pledge is $10 a month, whether it's $100 a month, we absolutely appreciate and we count on your gift.
You know, the day is young, so make a difference before you even leave your house. You can donate to WPR right now. Do it online at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Either way, you will have made a great start to your day and to ours.
Looking for 9 more pledges over the course of the next 31 minutes. Your gift right now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Such an important part of funding the programs that you enjoy.
You can show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio and remember to ask for the Reach Out and Read thank you gift. Your donation will support the programs like The Morning Show, all the shows you rely on here on WPR, and your thank you gift will provide books for young children. So you can do 2 good things at once this morning when you give $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Susan from Almond says, I love all the WPR programs. So thank you so much, Susan, for being a member of your public radio station. Your pledge right now, so important, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Over the years, scientists, they've learned a lot through a kid's repeated experiences, and that those actually alter the physical structure of the brain, creating new pathways. Author Catherine Reynolds Lewis writes that kids' brains are more plastic. The book is The Good News About Bad Behavior. We're talking about it here on The Morning Show, and you can join in with your experiences bringing up kids. If you think kids today are poorly behaved, what do you think is it that is at the heart of that? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Ask your questions, email ideas at WPR.org. Catherine, let's talk about media, because we see the screens all around us, whether it's a tablet, whether it's our phones that we slide over to the kid when things are getting out of hand. Where do we go right now with screens?
Well, screens are inevitable. They're part of our life. It's impossible to get rid of them and go back in time. So we have to accept that screens are something to manage and keep in a healthy proportion with our other healthy things that our kids are doing. So that means we have a family agreement around screens. As adults, we need to model how we use our screens in moderation, how we set them aside for family meals, or whatever our rules and limits are around use of screens.
I mean, we had difficulty last night with a screen, putting that phone away because there was this video of Elmo doing something and we couldn't do the normal routine. We couldn't read books together. So it's like you get caught in these situations, and the screen is so difficult because it wins a lot of the time.
Right. And sometimes you may need to take a break from screens. So when my kids were pretty young, we had to say no screens on weekdays because stopping was just too hard. They got frustrated. They couldn't turn it off. They had a meltdown that was as long as the time they had been on the screen. So it depends on your children. The older that they are, the more they're going to be able to have part of that discussion and be able to negotiate what are our agreements around use of screens, when we do use them and when we don't, and make it a conversation as opposed to demonizing the screens.
What about older children and teenagers? How are they different today, and how are they different also in terms of the technology they use and the phones that they have in their pocket?
Right. Well, older kids are so much more fluid and comfortable with social media than we adults are. So they're always going to be a step ahead of us. And that means that they're going to be experimenting. They're going to be making mistakes. They're going to be doing things that maybe they shouldn't in public view because social media is so public. And because of that, we're going to need to have a conversation with our teens starting when they're pretty young. So,
young, seven, eight, nine,
start talking about what are the...
Oh, and we've just lost Catherine having some technical difficulties. Catherine, are you there?
choices that are informed by the potential dangers. And there's a movement to wait until eighth grade to get your child a cell phone, which I am doing my best with my younger child, because I see that as soon as they get a cell phone, it's different from an iPad. It's in their pocket. It's much more accessible. It's harder for us as parents to limit and take away and to know what they're actually doing there. So that's one limit that I would suggest considering for family.
Catherine, we're having some technical difficulty then. There's a lot of echoes. But what is causing this behavior in the crises that we're having with kids today in terms of, teenagers and having their own conversations and their own social media and adults more or less becoming more and more disconnected by the conversation that their younger kids are having?
Well, children, especially teenagers, have their own culture, and they need to have their private spaces. So as adults, we want to be mentors. We want to advise and help them to understand how they're experiencing that so that we can help them stimulate their critical thinking and their understanding of what's going on. So it's not bad that they're having these separate conversations, but we want to be at least informing how they're interpreting them.
There's also research out there that says we're spending more time with kids in this day and age than we did back in the 1960s, that kids are with a parent, a caregiver, a lot more these days, that there should be a lot of interaction, that we also hear of this helicopter parenting, that we're closer. So if you're saying that we're also quite disconnected from community and from a larger community, at the core of that, are families more close-knit today?
Well, sometimes families can be isolated. We also may be physically with our children, but ourselves are in our cell phones or on our computers, and so we're present, but we may not be engaged in the way that we'd like to be. So that's a wonderful place for parents to start and think about how we're modeling use of technology. And yes, as much as possible, try to know our neighbors, try to be connected and embedded in our community so that our kids have a wider web of support for adults. One of the reasons I think there is this helicopter parenting, that many more parents feel some sense of guilt that we're not with our kids all the time. And I'd love to disabuse people of that notion because of that statistic you just mentioned, that parents spend more time with our children than any other time, so we don't need to feel guilty about it.
Catherine, when we are modeling good behavior, we can't have good behavior all the time. We're not perfect. So where do we start with what would make the greatest impact in being model adults and having that rub off on our kids?
If you could do just one thing, it would be to take a minute to pause before we respond and just take a deep breath, center ourselves so we can model that calm response instead of some heated reaction. And that's often the most difficult thing, but it can change the whole dynamic of a conflict. And then also to model, if we do lose it, to apologize, to make amends. Those are wonderful skills for our kids to learn. And those are the things that we can very simply model as adults.
So you're saying self-regulating ourselves, perhaps even before our kids?
Absolutely. Some of the really interesting research in my book talked about the scientists who are looking at how parents and children actually, our physiology will mirror each other. When we start to sit together in a room alone, our breathing will synchronize, our heart rates will synchronize. There's all this subconscious communication and connection between adult and child. So we're much more influential than we realize. And we need to be mindful that our kids are, you know, consciously watching us and mimicking us. And they're also subconsciously mimicking us.
Author Catherine Reynolds Lewis says she walked a middle path in parenting, sealing that close emotional connection with her kids with clear boundaries. She says adults and kids together set healthy limits and boundaries. We're talking about the book, The Good News About Bad Behavior, here on The Morning Show. Now let's hop over to our spring fun drive, see how far we've come on our hourly goal. Cheryl Gasser is here in the studio. Our goal is to keep bringing you topics like this topic about parenting and how to be model parents, what we can do about bad behavior. Your support makes that happen because listener support is actually the single largest source of funding for WPR programs. So give right now. Any amount makes a difference. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Good morning, Kate. We are looking for 9 more pledges in the next 42 minutes or so. So definitely time for your pledge, whether you call or pledge online. Your gift is so very important right now because when you give, you are making Wisconsin Public Radio possible. You're making the programs that you rely on every day possible.
And thank you so much if you've already given. If you haven't, the time is now. Give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What a great discussion we're having this hour about parenting and children and being present for our kids in this day of technology. I know I'm guilty of it. I learn something new every day here on WPR, and I think you do too. And you know, WPR, it is listener supported. That means that when you give, you make this hour and many more hours possible. So take a moment and make that pledge. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Let the impact of your pledge go beyond great radio. Ask for the reach out and read thank you gift when you give $10 a month or more.
That thank you gift will provide books to young children during their doctor visit, which is a great parent-child bonding and child development. Reading to your kids, having your kids read to you, what a great idea. So you can do 2 good things at once, support the WPR programs you love, and ask for the reach out and read thank you gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
At 6 o'clock, as soon as my husband gets out of bed, I turn on the radio in the room and it's on the whole day. I decided to become a sustaining member because it's so convenient. I've been a contributor to public radio probably for close to 20 years. It's just a very convenient way for the money to come out of your checking account on a monthly basis. My name is Nancy, and I'm from Sheldon, Wisconsin, and I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too.
Nancy, thank you so much for being a sustainer. You can become one too at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Ideas Network Director Cheryl Gasser. Listener support is the single biggest source of funding for the WPR programs that you rely on. And that is why your support during this spring membership drive is so very important. Maybe your gift is $10 a month or $100 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
And you can make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You can join your friends and neighbors who believe in the value of WPR and believe in supporting it. It takes the support of everyone who listens to make WPR as great as it can be.
When you make your pledge right this very minute at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, you'll be doing your part to make sure that the news, the information that you need, the great conversations on the Ideas Network, that it is all here every single day.
We are looking for 9 pledges by 7 o'clock. We'd love to hear from you now. And you make WPR possible. You make the Ideas Network possible when you give. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Aaron from Madison says, WPR is part of my daily routine. I know I can count on WPR for balanced, impartial state and national news. Aaron, thank you so much for your support. Your gift is powerful. It makes a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. focus on the quality time that you spend with your kids. It's one of the takeaways from the new book, The Good News About Bad Behavior. Catherine Reynolds Lewis stays with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. If you're a parent, a caregiver, have you tried your own parents' methods of parenting? How did that go for you? What are your questions about parenting? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Catherine, what is quality time? Because it seems pretty arbitrary to say, you know what, spend that quality time, the two of you together or your kids together, but when do you know you've achieved quality time? Because there are so many distractions.
Yeah, so one of the things that we teach in the parent education program that I teach in Washington, D.C., is special time, which is designated one parent, one child, and it's time limited, so maybe just 15 minutes for a young child. And what's special about it is that you determine, I will not be distracted. I will only give this child my focus, and we're going to do whatever they want to do, even if it's like the 100th game of Candyland or playing with something that is mind-numbing for an adult. We can handle it for 15 minutes, and we put it on the schedule just like all the other important things on our calendar. So not only is it high quality, the child gets to choose, but they see that we're making them a priority. And it's sort of a deposit in the bank of our relationship. We spend so much time with our kids, but often it's this half-present time where we're distracted by a task or something else that's on our mind. And when you really set aside that focus time, it makes a difference in our children's lives.
Explain for us the difference between authoritarian parenting and authoritative parenting style, and kind of the road that you've taken on this.
Right. Authoritarian parenting is the I'm the boss, I'm the parent, and so you do what I say. And when I started looking at the research, it was troubling to see that children of authoritarian parents might do well in school and they might avoid drugs and alcohol because they were afraid of their parents, but ultimately they didn't have the best mental health outcomes and they didn't always have the best relationship with their parents. And when you look at the rates of mental illness, that's not something we want for our children. Authoritative parenting has been studied to be the most effective in developing both that secure emotional attachment and relationship and mental health, and also helping children to learn to make their own decisions. And it's warmth and connection on the parent's part, tempered by limits and family agreements, and a structure that shows the children where the boundaries are.
So there are clear structure and boundaries around what is acceptable in our family, what is not acceptable. But what happens when a child goes out of those boundaries?
Right. So ideally, you've already discussed it, and you have. They know what the consequences will be. And the thing about authoritative parenting is that you're always widening your child's sphere of responsibility and independence, and you're always trying to shrink your own, because our goal as parents is to shove the kids out of the nest at 18 and have them be able to run their own lives. So we should always be thinking about not how am I going to control my children, how am I going to get them to do what I want, but how can I stimulate their self-discipline? How can I contribute to their growing independence? And once we make that mental shift, it's not as hard to see our kids going outside the lines, because it's really just their learning process. They're going to make their choices, and then they'll experience the consequences of those actions. When our kids, quote-unquote, misbehave, they're not being bad. It's not a failing on our part. It's actually part of the learning process for them to make a mistake and go color outside the lines and then have to deal with the consequences.
It was interesting to me in your book where you talk about how kids are overscheduled today, that we're going from one practice to the next, one game to the next. There are these traveling teams that you talked about. But at the end of the day, it's giving them more skills at home, showing them that, you know, you don't have to do all these sports, but if you learn some skills at home, perhaps mowing the lawn or doing the dishes, doing laundry, that can really add to a child's emotional network and help them grow in new ways.
It's really fascinating that when you look at the research on chores and happiness, that something as simple as making your bed in the morning and then seeing a tidy room can boost your well-being for the whole day. And especially when you're doing chores, or we like to call them jobs because chores has such a negative connotation. When my kids are doing household jobs, they get to see how it makes everyone else's life easier and better. And so that sense of feeding your loved ones' well-being is another way that household jobs are really wonderful for kids. And if you think about as adults, the last time we were unemployed, it's a terrible place to be. You feel worthless, you feel desperate. And the same thing is true when our children are unemployed, when they don't have any tangible way to contribute, or they don't have anything that they're supposed to do at home. And they often get to be a little bit at loose ends and sometimes destructive. If your child is really driven and wants to pursue something intense and demanding, I would just advise to incorporate that into, you know, other things that are important in your family life, and don't make that their only thing that they do.
So what is your advice to parents listening to this and feeling pretty desperate right now because they've tried lots of things, they've read lots of books, and they're looking for some new insights as they approach some really difficult times with a child?
Right. Well, really, I would say make those two things your priority, your relationship with your child and their growing independence, and everything else will fall into place. One thing that some of the parents I interviewed in the book have tried is a do-nothing, say-nothing week, where they simply drop all of the nagging, bribing, pleading, and bossing, and they just observe what their children actually are capable of doing. And that's sort of a reset button or a detox where you drop all the bad habits and you start fresh, and you really start from the point of what are my children willing to do around the house? What responsibilities can they shoulder? And then you just systematically try to increase that. And once we stop being on our kids' back about things, you'll find that actually they are much more cooperative and we have a more calm and loving family as well.
So, Catherine, help us understand a little bit better here. What is the good news about bad behavior these days? And what should we be hopeful about?
Well, the good news from my perspective is that when we see our kids acting out, so often that triggers a feeling of shame in us as parents. Did I do something wrong? Are they going to be down in a van by the river in 18 years? And it's actually not a problem. The good news is that that is a signal to you of what you're going to work on next. Okay, maybe my child needs to work on transitions. Maybe my child needs to work on impulse control or frustration tolerance. It's just a to-do item on your list as a parent. It's not a sign that there's something wrong. So we're all in this together. And that's what's helpful to me about some of these statistics that are a little bit scary, is that there's no shame in your child having some struggles, because one in two kids is going to have something that they're contending with that's pretty big. And there are so many research-backed models of discipline that teach children how to self-regulate, how to manage their behavior, how to talk back to their despairing thoughts, how to control their strong emotions. And we just need to tap into all of these really wonderful tools and strategies to find the ones that work for us and our children.
And if we're at a loss and we don't know really where this behavior is coming from, we're getting these notes from school, suspensions, the behavior issues. What about having just clear communication channels to figuring out what is going on?
Right, absolutely. It's a scary place to be as a parent, but it's always better to know sooner rather than later. So if you can view it as an opportunity to tackle something that would have been a problem later, that can really be another way to look at it. And yes, working with the school is so important, being open to hearing what they have to say, because they're observing your child in a setting that you don't understand. And something I hear from educators a lot is when they contact parents about a problem, they first get this defensive reaction. And so often they're steeled to that. And if instead, as parents, we can go in and say, I want to work with you to understand what's happening, and involve the child in the discussion and say, what's this like for you? No child wakes up in the morning thinking, today I'm going to disappoint my parents and my teachers. Mm. They don't want that. So we just need to help them find the path that sort of that won't happen. And there's something getting in the way of their success. We just need to figure out what it is.
Well, Catherine, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Really a wonderful conversation.
Catherine Reynolds Lewis is the author of The Good News About Bad Behavior, Why Kids Are Less Disciplined Than Ever, and What to Do About It. This hour of the morning show was produced by Colleen Leahy. Michael Derringer provided technical direction. Michelle Johnson is executive producer. Now let's segue over to our spring membership drive that is moving right along on this beautiful Wednesday morning. And Michelle Johnson back now here in the studio, executive producer of Mornings. We're here to ask you to invest a few minutes of your time to support your future WPR listening.
Listener support.
Oh, and Michelle's got to clear that bad voice. Listener support makes up the single largest piece of the funding for the WPR programs you count on. That's why your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 is so important.
Thanks for jumping in there, Kate. We have we're looking for 8 more pledges in the next few minutes of the morning show. To keep us on track, make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And so much of the conversations that we have on the morning show is news you can use, is thoughtful conversation about looking at our world in a new way, whether it's parenting, whether it's politics, whether it's some other type of conversation. There's always something useful that you can take away from the conversation. WPR is listener supported. That means when you give, you make it possible at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. You make this hour and many more hours possible. Choose an amount that works for you. Take a few minutes and make your pledge.
This conversation that we've been having over the last hour, it's just fascinating. It's the sort of conversation that you will only hear here on the Ideas Network, talking about better parenting. You know, our guest said something that really struck me. She said, there's no shame in having kids who are having trouble. It's a really refreshing thing to hear. It gives, if you're a parent, Kate, you're a parent.
I'm a parent, yes.
Did that resonate with
you? It did, and just her even keel, her insights, they're very helpful. And it's conversations like this one that we can take something away from. WPR is part of your daily routine. It's your daily news source, your conversation starter, your place to learn new insights. So spend some money on it today and every day. Start $1 a day. That's $30 or $31 a month. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now let's admit it. Sometimes we spend money on silly things.
I have definitely bought some crazy clothes.
It's a little thing, you wind it up and it goes across the top of the table. She broke it in the first 5 seconds.
Silliest thing. It was Kahlua.
It's pretty easy to make a questionable decision about how we spend our money, and it can be just as easy, and not a bad idea, to make a few sound investments along the way, like supporting Wisconsin Public Radio. Listener support is the single largest source of funding at WPR, so make a sound investment with your gift to WPR right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's right. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge. We need 8 more pledges now to stay on track in the next few minutes. I know we can get there. I'm Kate Archer-Kent here with Michelle Johnson. We're asking for your support during this spring membership drive because it what makes the WPR programs that you rely on possible. And your gift, in whatever amount you choose, that is the right amount.
Wisconsin Public Radio works on the honor system. You don't have to pay for it, but you do choose to support it. You make all the WPR programs you enjoy possible. How about a pledge right now of $10 a month?
You decide the amount and then go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Lydia from La Crosse in this morning says, WPR all day in the car. Great soundtrack to my day, to my life. Thank you so much, Lydia. Your gift is powerful and makes a difference at 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support.